Kenny, years back, I got the pleasure of interviewing another great blues guitarist from Louisiana, Buddy Guy. He told a story about getting scolded by his mom for letting in flies because he had stripped the wires out of the screen door to make strings for his cigar box guitar. You signed for a major label at 13. When and how did you get your first guitar, and do you still have it?
Well, yeah, I do still have it. I guess it depends on what you consider my first guitar. So, like, my grandmother used to buy me these little plastic acoustic guitars from the S&H Green Stamp store. And for any listeners who aren't familiar or don't remember that, there was these places you could buy merchandise and they'd give you stamps at the end based on how much money you'd spend, and you'd collect the stamps in little booklets and then you could go back and redeem those for free merchandise. And so she bought me this little toy acoustic guitar when I was probably about 4 years old. And I started learning how to play, you know, certain little tidbits on that thing. And I would wear that one out. She'd go get me another one. And I went through several of those before I got my first real electric guitar. And that was at age 7. And it was just after seeing Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble play for the very first time, for me to see them for the first time. And so that was a life-changing experience for me, because, like, the way he affected me, the way he played the instrument, it was like, wow, I have got to get an electric guitar and I've got to learn how to, like, play with that passion and intensity that he plays with. And so it wasn't long after that, at age 7, that I got my very first electric guitar, and I still have it.
Outstanding. I still have my first electric Hondo 2, which doesn't say a whole lot, but it's still on my wall at home. You're coming to Iowa in a couple of months. You're going to be performing Ledbetter Heights in its entirety, the album that put you on the map 30 years ago. How do the songs that you wrote and played at 18 sound and feel different than you now at 48?
Well, to be honest with you, they feel, I mean, because some of them we've been playing because they were big radio songs. So some of those songs we've been playing over the past 3 decades. But there's actually a large part of this album that we have not played in about 29 years. And so with this tour, we're playing every song off of this album. And actually the first time we ever played every song from this record live in concert. And so, yeah, we got reacquainted with a lot of these songs. We recorded a new version of this album that'll come out in May and updated some of these songs. And then, you know, one of the biggest differences between the new version of it and the older version is that Noah Hunt is on lead vocals now. Noah joined my band on the second album. On my first album, we had a different singer in the band. And Noah's been with me since my second album. And a lot of people have often wondered what the first album might have sounded like if he had been in the band back then. So they get to hear that now. But all that being said is that, you know, these songs still resonate. They still connect with the fans. My goal was to write and record timeless music that people could be enjoying for decades to come. And here we are 30 years later, playing this music, and the fans are excited about it. We're excited about it. And they all kind of hit about the same, to be honest with you. Like, a lot of people ask, have any of them taken on a new meaning? But, you know, there's not a lot of that happened. You know, the thing that has happened is that the songs have evolved, but they've stood the test of time. And to me, I think that's what's most important.
We interviewed Rick Springfield at the Iowa State Fair a few years back. He said he was sick of Jesse's Girl. He played it a million times, but he kept on playing it because that's what the audience wants. Do you feel that way at all about Ledbetter Heights?
No, I don't, actually. I don't feel that way about any of my records. I'm very happy to say that I still enjoy playing all the songs that I've recorded in my career, because I never let myself be convinced or talked into recording or playing a song that I didn't feel connected to or that I didn't really like. And most of the time I wrote the songs as well. So there's that also. But no, I mean, you know, we played Blue on Black, which was, you know, probably our biggest radio hit, you know, from 1998. And we played it every single show, and I'm still not tired of it. And I'm certainly not tired of the way the audience reacts to it. So thankfully, no, I'm not embarrassed of any of my songs or any of my albums, and I still enjoy playing all the songs.
I saw the Ataris here in Des Moines a few years ago. They were playing their big album, So Long Astoria, in its entirety. I used to play that CD end to end. It was great to hear it live. But today's generation, they stream Spotify playlists. Do they still buy whole albums? Do people still listen to whole albums at one time?
Well, so that's a fair question. And I bring that point up in the show, actually, because, you know, the younger generation, I would say no. They're discovering music on their phone in apps and things like that. And they might hear one song and they add it to a playlist. You know, my fans, you know, they were around back in the era where you would hear a song on the radio, and then you would call into the radio station and ask who the artist was, and you would go to your local record store and you would buy the whole album because you heard the one song on the radio. Then you would take it home and you would open it up, put it on, and listen to the whole album while you're flipping through the booklet and looking at the artwork and reading the lyrics. Then it was an entire experience, you know, like music and listening to music was an experience, you know. And so we're celebrating that on this tour, because most of my fans who are coming to hear this tour, they heard the whole album because they bought the whole album, because that's how it was back then. Today, I think it's a completely different situation, but I certainly hope that somehow or another we can get back to really having an experience listening to music.
I've got time for one more question. You're doing Ledbetter Heights for the first half of your show. The second half is going to spotlight more of your other songs over the past 30 years. How do you narrow down your greatest hits for that second set, since you've had so many good songs?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's challenging to try and balance it and also not, you know, have too little music or not have too much, because we do have a schedule as well. Like the venues, sometimes you can only play so long and then you have to be done, right? So we just chose a collection of songs. Really, I'm showcasing some of the more recent songs, because we have been making albums this entire time. We just released two records in the last couple of years, like Dirt on My Diamonds, volume number one and volume number two. It's like, you know, we've been putting out new music consistently over the past three decades. So I've got a few newer songs in there and a couple of other ones that are crowd favorites that they like to see us perform. So, you know, hopefully I think all the fans so far, we've done six shows, I think, since we've kicked off the tour. And the reaction has been extremely positive across the board. So it seems to be a great show for everybody.